Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And one of the reasons things never improve in Chicago is the media and the moneyed drive all of the wrong debates. False debates, straw man arguments. A case in point, to elect or to not elect a Chicago school board. You heard Mike Scott talking about it at the top of the hour with legislative action on the topic. The Senate passing a plan to institute a elected CPS school board by 2027, 21-member board.
Yeah, going up from 7 to 21 and half elected and half appointed.
And Triple Threat has introduced a compromise plan that would be 11-member board with 8 and 3.
A hybrid, because we love that word hybrid so much. Let's continue it.
Does it matter whether or not the school board is elected or appointed, other than for optics? Is this a discussion of form over function, or is this a function? Is this a gain of function, to borrow a phrase, discussion? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Amy, you're a CPS parent, so you have more of a stake in this than I do. What do you say?
Well, I used to, when I was a young cub reporter in 1997 here, I thought, why are people like Penny Pritzker? She can't relate to parents on a school board. You know, her world is completely different than ours. And now there's no way in the world, because we'll be long gone from here. My kids will be, but still some of my players are still going to be here and my neighbors. And I would dread the day that they have to live with an elected school board, because it will all be CTU perfunctionaries. It will be CTU parents or support CTU supportive parents, SEIU. I mean, it's going to be all we'll lose all complete control of our school system, because CTU has so much power the way it is right now. Can you imagine if they had charge of the school board? We'd have no say in anything.
Well, that's right. I mean, that's what would happen. Yeah. It's obvious that's what would happen. It's obvious this is why your Democrat socialist supermajorities in the Senate passed it. Your Democrat supermajority in the House under that slime ball alleged, according to the Hillside Police, domestic abuser Chris Welch said they'll pass it because they're wholly owned subsidiaries of the teachers unions and the public sector unions generally in this state. Why even have the discussion? Who cares? You know what people should be saying? Do it. Go ahead. Do it.
Make matters worse. I mean, make it get worse faster. 312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. But while we're here, we're still going to fight.
Well, and then perhaps you could make your objections, you could direct your objections to the proper parties rather than this game that's played. So, for example, this organization called Stand for Children, which is financed by the James Crowns and the other champagne socialists of the world, Chicago's enlightened elite. You were talking about Penny Pritzker from 20 years ago. It's the same deal. Same deal. They think, you know, we're really policy people. We're standing for children. Thus the name of the organization. And Bruce Rauner was the founder of that organization. So all of sort of the combined transactional hacks who like to have their name in the paper and who like to be seen as the vanguard of the city. These are the people who drive this policy. They think they're making a big stand by opposing the so readily opposable Chicago Teachers Union. They're real enlightened and they're real policy oriented and they're real education reformers because they can bring themselves to stand publicly against one of the most noxious unions on the planet, the Chicago Teachers Union. Big deal. But otherwise, they're on board with central planning. They just want to be the central planners in charge. They're on board with the Democrat Socialist agenda, generally speaking, culturally as well as economically. But this stand for children, they say, with an elected school board, this is to accomplish something for cocktail party chatter. This has nothing to do with improving the educational opportunities, much less outcomes for children in Chicago. And the people to blame are hacks in newsrooms at the AFL-CIO Times, and really to a large extent the Chicago Tribune, with the exception of McQuarrie and Cass, and all of those who are their sort of affiliates and apostles. That's who you should be directing your attention to.
Newsrooms do stories based on newspapers. So if they do a selective,
saying
if the Sun Times, AFL-CIO Sun Times, is a story which they have about a pro elected school board, then they're going to just see that story and then run with it.
Yeah, well, that says something about the depth of television news too.
Well, that's why network ratings affiliate are disgusting. News. I mean, it's 1.4 share, and yay, they won the 10 o'clock slot. Wee.
Well, so here's the thing. Direct your ire where it most deservedly belongs. That's what we don't do. Drive debates that the media and the moneyed don't want you to have. That's what you should do. And, this has to come from neighborhoods up. There's no white knights coming to deliver you from Triple Threat, the Chicago Teachers Union, or Stand for Children. All terrible, terrible when it comes to any interest in improving the outcomes for children. These are all institutionalists. They are working to protect their fiefdoms and the institutions as they are currently compromised, more or less. This is an internal power struggle of central planners. This is not a debate between central planning and a competitive model. Do you understand? Because people need to understand this. And let me tell you something. Concurrent to all of this manufactured hoopla over whether or not to elect a Chicago school board, you actually had a real accomplishment in this General Assembly session. Yeah. And the issue that we track here and few others do, which is the tax credit scholarships. Mm-hmm. The coalition that was really driven by trade unions, because thankfully, as I'm wont to say, the bad news is that most of the legislators in Springfield are cowards. And the good news is also that they're cowards. They're afraid of the trade unions, too, particularly the local 150s of the world. And so the trade unions drove protecting the tax credit scholarships. And so what you saw is, despite the fact that you have Democrat socialist majorities in both chambers, the sunset date was actually extended a year for that program, which provides yet another year to buy time to help more children, number one, to build more of a constituency for school choice and competitive model, number two. And if we could get those parents who are benefiting from those scholarships, along with trade unions who want to open a trade school, and fine, great, good.
Wonderful.
Then maybe you're starting to have a real discussion about not propagating a new institution, but propagating a new mentality in Chicago that would produce improved results.
A lot of people were scratching their heads and said, why would you want to kill a bill that helps children? Why would you want to do that in the first place? And was it because Pritzker wanted to, just slash everything that Rauner created during his time in office?
No, because they're toadies of the teachers union. Because they're controlled by the teachers union. That's their constituency. Okay. The public sector unions, SEIU, AFSCME, and the teachers unions, that is the Democrat Socialist constituency. In point of fact, it's almost reversed, where the public sector unions are in charge and the elected officials they financed into office, these Democrat Socialist supermajorities, the elected officials are the constituents of the public sector unions who are actually in charge running the shadow government. That's how it really operates and functions.
And speaking of the unions, another victory was, House Bill 2789, which would give Governor Pritzker more control over private schools and religious schools. That was down. That got shot down, too.
Yeah, well, that's a good example of bubbling up from the neighborhoods and the hamlets around Illinois and putting pressure on legislators around the state, because otherwise they're happy to defer to, their cadre of central planners.
Don't think that your voices and your phone calls and your emails didn't matter, because it did on that bill.
Politicians, even the Democrat socialists, they want to protect their jobs at all costs, so they're susceptible to pressure. And if they think they're on the wrong side of an issue, that could be a referendum on their continued existence and their sinecure, then, yeah, they're paying attention. Candace in Mount Pleasant, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I come from the point of view now that I just think that school boards are worthless and not needed, and they're just there to protect the teachers. And I don't understand why people don't move to get rid of them, because the principal and the superintendent and the teachers should be directly answerable to the parents and the taxpayers.
Well, right, but when you have actual school boards that are not captured by the teachers' union or the administrators, then you have a check. I mean, that this is what we talk about all the time, and we did before the school board elections this past April, which is those are your fiduciaries. Those are your elected representatives, like state legislators are your elected representatives to represent your interests in state government and in this representative republic more generally.
But they're not.
Well, I understand, the question is it a personnel problem or is it a structural problem? Do you want less representation?
Problem.
You want less representation?
No. Why are they the representation? Why isn't the principal and the teachers direct?
Well, the principal and the teachers are direct. There's nothing that bars parents from going to petition a principal or a school teacher. But you also have fiduciary oversight of the school district and ostensibly programmatic oversight of the school district as well, so that somebody is watching what the, again, in theory, watching what the administrators and the teachers and the teachers union is doing. So, I don't know. I'm all for eliminating the layers of government in Illinois, but I don't know that school boards and the desire for local control where it's properly exercised is the way to go. I think that's one accountability mechanism or one path to having an accountability mechanism, not that it always works in function. I understand. Thanks for the call. Teresa on the north side.
Good morning, Amy and Dan. Dan, I agree. I mean, just go ahead, merge the teachers union and the CPS together, and let's just see how that works out. Let them dictate your children's education. And, you know, since for some reason a bunch of morons elected Biden to destroy our country, why not? Just go ahead, do it. Let's see how that works out. I don't think it's going to work out well.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Teresa. I mean, I'm sort of in the position with respect to Chicago Public Schools that I am with respect to the Illinois Republican Party.
Yeah,
I'm just not interested in saving people who aren't interested in fighting for themselves.
I want to run for the school board. Would you vote for me? Would you help me campaign?
Sure.
Do you think I'd get any votes?
You're going to run. Well, you run for the school board saying we shouldn't have an elected school board.
Exactly.
That'll be a fun campaign.
I think it'd be fun. Why not? Let's do it.
Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So the Fauci email dump at the behest of FOIA requests made by BuzzFeed and the Washington Post, Amazon Post, to be more accurate. There's much to cover, many topics covered in the emails that have been released and poured over. Origins, masks, reinfection, asymptomatic spread. Let's take them each in turn. Let's start with origins. A key email in the release is from an NIH, National Institute of Health Scientists, named Christian Anderson, who emailed Fauci January 31st of 2020. And that email said the following, quoting it, on a phylogenetic tree, the virus looks totally normal, and the close clustering with bats suggests the bats serve as the reservoir. The unusual features of the virus make up a really small part of the genome, so one has to look really closely at all the sequences to see that some of the features potentially look engineered. So the specter of that this was engineered, some could ask weaponized, in the virology lab, was raised by an NIH scientist on January 31st of 2020. Here's what Tony Fauci said publicly at a White House briefing 3 months later in April of 2020 about the possibility that this escaped from the lab rather than was the product of
a man eating a bat in a wet market
from species transfer.
A group of highly qualified evolutionary virologists looked at the sequences there and the sequences in bats as they evolve, and the mutations that it took to get to the point where it is now is totally consistent with a jump of a species from an animal to a human.
So he dismissed the issue raised by Christian Anderson within the National Institutes for Health. He also did so, and he wasn't really asked about this in the interviews he deigned to do for, of course, CNN and MSNBC yesterday. He wasn't asked about this. So potentially it could be, well, we took what Anderson said, we looked at it, and then we concluded that that was not the case, or it's unlikely to be the case. But see, this is one of the problems with Fauci's, and this is why he is such an effective prevaricator, of course, with his accomplices in the D.C. press corps. Rather than disclose everything he knows, say, you know, it's interesting you raised that point. We had a scientist within the National Institutes of Health raise the possibility that some of the sequencing of the genome looked engineered. So we investigated it. And here's what we know where we don't know. Rather than drawing the conclusion and then announcing it publicly at one of these White House briefings, and remember, this is with Pence and Trump standing behind him, that the suggestion that this could have escaped from the lab or been, you know, purposely released from the lab, that should be dismissed. I mean, the reporting per that statement you just heard from Fauci in April of 2020 was that Fauci debunks the idea that the virus came from the lab.
Right. Well, he was on CNN yesterday and said, you know, give me a break. It's a far-fetched theory that they deliberately engineered a bioweapon.
Well,
I think is quite far-fetched that the Chinese deliberately engineered something so that they could kill themselves as well as other people. I think that's a bit far out, John.
But then he told John, too, but it's a possibility that it was engineered. Well, it was engineered. If you read some of those emails, I mean, you have scientists that say that the virus looks engineered. And one scientist even said, and this is how they engineered it. So he's continuing to lie.
Well, we don't know. We don't know that it was engineered. But what we know is that it's more likely than not that it came from the lab at this point, based on the evidence.
Yeah,
I think you could say that confidently. Also, the first question with respect to the emails that were raised by that insufferable prig, John Berman, on CNN. This happened 2 days, the first email from EcoHealth Alliance, 2 or 3 days after that statement you heard from Fauci at that April 2020 briefing. EcoHealth Alliance was the grantee of NIAID funding, Fauci's agency. And here's what they said, as memorialized by Berman in the setup to the question, and here's Fauci's response.
And this email thanked you for basically saying you believed that the origins of the coronavirus were natural. This email said, quote, I wanted to say a personal thank you on behalf of our staff and collaborators for publicly standing up and stating that the scientific evidence supports a natural origin for COVID-19 from bat to human spillover, not a lab release from the Wuhan Institute of Virology. That email was April 18th. Now, there are some of your critics who say this shows you have too cozy of a relationship with the people behind the Wuhan lab research. What do you say to that?
Oh, that's nonsense. I don't even see how they get that from that email. That email was sent to me from them. I have always said, and will say today to you, John, that I still believe the most likely origin is from an animal species to a human, but I keep an absolutely open mind that if there may be other origins of that, there may be another reason. It could have been a lab leak. I believe if you look historically what happens in the animal-human interface, that in fact the more likelihood is that you're dealing with a jump of species. But I keep an open mind all the time.
It's interesting because he had the opportunity to make that statement in that April 2020 briefing.
And he didn't.
He didn't make that statement.
He didn't make that statement for the Senate hearing?
He has never said, certainly not consistently, that here's what we think, but I keep an open mind. This is why the reporting in April of 2020 was debunked. Fauci debunks. We had a bunch of evolutionary virologists look at this. It's consistent with animal to human transmission or transfer. Now it's, hey, look, I'm all for investigations because he's having to bail water.
Right. Now he's the victim, though. Because these emails, I mean, the mainstream media, now they're cozying up to him. You're like, oh, it's okay. And gosh, if people got my emails, I don't know what they would think. And you're so brave. No, he is a liar. And he has affected tens of millions of people's lives, not only in the United States, but around the world. He's profiting off this pandemic, too. They should stop printing his book immediately. They should have him retire immediately. And why aren't they doing that? Because they're in on it.
Okay, just continuing to try to develop what we understand from these emails, or should understand, the questions that should be raised from the emails and comparing and contrasting those with Fauci's public pronouncements. So we have the Christian Anderson email in January. We have what Fauci said in April at the height of the outbreak and the push for the lockdowns that went into effect. Then we also have emails that relate back to his testimony back and the back and forth he had during Senate testimony with Rand Paul just a few weeks ago, where they got into this argument about gain of function, and Fauci insisting there was never any funding for gain of function research at the Wuhan lab. Well, there are references to gain of function research potentially relevant to COVID being conducted there in emails that Fauci sent back in February of 2020, including a reference to that Dr. Barrick that was the subject of who was doing the gain of function research that was funded by, serving as a pass-through that was funded by Fauci's agency. So there are gain of function research in Fauci's emails, references in Fauci's email. So this is another question that should have been followed up on by, the ciphers at MSNBC and CNN, and they weren't. And, this is something else, too. Fauci, Mr. Transparency, Mr. Open-mindedness. Well, why is it that you never see him anywhere other than CNN and MSNBC or talking to the New York Times or doing some goofball leftist podcast?
I know, with like purple hair.
I mean, occasionally he'll go on with Chris Wallace, who's also, frankly, a man of the left. So that's easy enough, too.
And we're going to have Brett Baer on at 7:07. We'll ask him, because one of the emails, they were requesting an interview on Fox, and he said no. But yet he does everybody else's shows, except for that.
Then the question about the Francis Collins email. Francis Collins is the director of the National Institutes for Health, and an email referencing conspiracy theories on origins. Well, that's something, a significant portion of that email was redacted. And of course, Fauci can't recollect. I mean, there's so many emails he sent over the last year.
Conspiracy theory gains momentum. And this, again, was the idea of the lab leak. Those emails, though, as you can see on the screen, or I can see on the screen, was all redacted between you and Francis Collins.
Yeah.
Do you happen to remember? Do you remember what
John,
was in the email?
John, they only took about 10,000 emails from me. Of course I remember. I remember all 10,000 of them. Give me a break.
but to be clear, you're saying you don't remember. You can't tell us what was in the body of that exchange.
I don't remember what's in that redacted. But the idea, I think, is quite far-fetched that the Chinese deliberately engineered something so that they could kill themselves as well as other people. I think that's a bit far out, John.
It's interesting he's willing to speculate on China's motivations. By the way, something's far-fetched, China killing its own people. Are we talking about the communist China that has a million Uyghurs in concentration camps? Are we talking about the same communist China that had a one-child policy, now a two-child policy, now a three-child policy? But the one-child policy and how disgusting
what they did to
and inhumane that was, the murder, effectively, of millions of girls
forced
in China?
Abortions. Disgusting. So he doesn't think that they're willing.
They're not capable.
Of killing themselves, killing each other. Yeah.
And it's interesting. This is like classic Fauci. This is when he was over on Morning Joe. What he will and will not speculate on. He'll speculate to China's benefit, but he won't speculate to China's detriment. It's very interesting. Take a listen, Tony Fauci, on again repeating that it's in China's interest to find out what happened. Is it?
I mean, it's obviously in China's interest to find out exactly what it is. And the is of the natural theory would be to find that link. So you have to keep looking for it. I mean, obviously, you want openness and cooperation. One of the ways you can get it is don't be accusatory. Try to get both a forensic, a scientific, and an investigational approach. I think the accusatory part about it is only going to get them to pull back even more. We've got to do it in a combination of diplomacy, scientific, forensic investigation, and do it in a way that the people of good faith, not who want to do blame, but people in good faith are really trying to find out what the origin is.
Really, people of good faith?
If this was China's Chernobyl, the Chi-Com's Chernobyl, then would it still be in their interest to find out, to quote-unquote find out something that they potentially already know? Did you ever consider that, Tony? No, wasn't asked.
I mean, did you hear what happened to the former CDC director, Robert Redfield? He told Vanity Fair yesterday that he received death threats for even saying that COVID-19 originated in a Wuhan lab, but not death threats from people from other scientists. Because they didn't want that information out. He said, I was threatened and ostracized because I proposed another hypothesis.
Right.
I expected it from politicians. I didn't expect it from science.
Yeah, well, this speaks to how politicized science has been, and in part because of political hacks masquerading as scientists like Tony Fauci, frankly. I don't know how else you describe him in light of all of this evidence. The interest of China to find out. People of good faith. And by the way, there is Tony Fauci. He's a diplomat.
Right.
Now he should be at the State Department.
He just takes
telling
them on
you
their
how
word.
you should approach China. You have to appease them, don't accuse them. Right. Appeasement, that's what works with communist thugs. Thanks for the tip, Tony. Now as to whether there was any interest potentially in China concealing it. That was asked, actually, by Willie Geist, shockingly.
Good.
And here's Tony Fauci, unwilling to speculate.
You know, Willie, I don't want to be speculating on that because every time I say something like that, you know it as well as I. It will get completely taken out of context and go into the Twitter world like crazy. So, I mean, I'm going to leave that to other people and not surmise and guess whose interest it is. It's not helpful. Because everything you say then gets completely taken out of context.
So he's willing to speculate and guess that China has an interest in finding out, but he's not willing to speculate and guess that maybe China has an interest in concealment.
Of course they're going to conceal it. They have been since it happened, people. And I fell for it hook, line, and sinker, and I feel like a fool, but now I'm woke, Dan.
I'm glad to hear that.
Thank you.
In this sense, this limited sense only.
Oh,
Cassandra
hey.
In Ravenswood, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. I think that I'm one of the people of not goodwill because this guy has been off the rails for a long time, in my opinion. But I think the most important thing here is that we had treatments that were successful in treating this, and hundreds of thousands of people died because the entire scientific community almost, they're the outliers that you all have spoken with, just poo-pooed the whole thing. Hydroxychloroquine, nah. Mm-hmm. No, what is it, Bucidinone, or I'm sorry, I
Budesidine.
Can't remember. Thank you. ivermectin, all these things that are treatments. And we had our governor up there saying, well, as soon as there's a treatment, we'll open up. There's always been a treatment, and these people let hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people die. And we see India that finally turns to ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, and there's silence about the fact that their death rate and their success in treating the disease has skyrocketed. Success, death rate plummeted. So I think that's the most important thing, is that these people, for whatever their incompetence, their corruption, their politics, I don't care what it is, these people killed people. They are complicit in letting people die from this disease, all of them.
Thanks, Cassandra.
And Fauci knew, too. That's why he should lose his job immediately. He should even be charged with something. What about lying under oath in front of that Senate committee?
I don't know.
We get him on that?
I don't know if he was under oath, but... and certainly the next time he's back before Rand Paul, it should be entertaining. Pete and Racine.
Good morning. Say, with China, if they wanted to prove that this didn't happen in the lab, you would think they'd have done many studies on animals and found animals that had this disease. And why was there never a study that, at least I have heard of they've studied animals and definitely found that, which China I would think would find in there, you know, they would make sure it comes out that way when they do their study. But there hasn't been one study. They haven't proven that any animals have had this, as far as I know.
And China they've been eating bats for centuries, and they're still eating bats. They never stopped. Didn't come from that.
Well, again, just in terms of incentives, if what incentive does China have? Does China have an incentive to be able to provide a smoking bat, as it were, and say, look, this is where it started. We told you we handle the virus better with the lockdowns that we instituted in Wuhan and elsewhere, and the West didn't. And this is, again, proof that the Chi-Com central planners are superior to Western democracies. This is their opportunity to make that case. When they're unwilling and they're trying to make any investigation into this go away, what does that speak to? Jim and Crown Point.
Talking about science, you can't go with science anymore, because a man can be a woman and a woman can be a man, even though biologically they can't. So as for Fauci, he deflected the question. The guy asked, should this have happened? And he goes, well, do you think they want to kill themselves? That's not the question. The question is, why are they doing the testing to begin with?
Well, that's one of the questions. Yeah, thanks for the call, Jim. One of the questions is, you know, what was the nature of the research in terms of the objective? Number two is, who was funding it? Number three is, who had requisite knowledge of what the objective is and the funding? And a lot of roads, per these emails, lead back to Tony Fauci, don't they?
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We're continuing our conversation about the 3,200-page Fauci email dump per FOIA request by BuzzFeed and the Amazon Post. We talked at the end of last hour about what the emails tell us about Fauci's understanding of where the virus originated, or what his understanding should have been, and comparing and contrasting that understanding with his public statements on the topic. Before we get to even some of the other matters on which he opined, asymptomatic spread, mask wearing, he got the kiss of death yesterday from White House press spokesbeing
Jen
Psaki. The air's coming out of Fauci's balloon, too.
Let me just say, on Dr. Fauci and his emails, he's also spoken to this many, many times over the course of the last few days, and we'll let him speak for himself. And he's been an undeniable asset in our country's pandemic response. But it's obviously not that advantageous for me to relitigate the substance of emails from 17 months ago.
Of course it isn't. Undeniable asset. That's the Judas kiss right there. Undeniable asset, but I'm not going to go through chapter and verse on the emails and have, you know, the Fox reporters, essentially, because that's really the only people who are going to push her on the topic, Ducey, go back and forth with them on what Fauci said versus what it said publicly versus what he communicated or understood from email transmissions. Uh-huh. So Fauci on mask wearing, and this is in the context of the former HHS secretary, Sylvia Burwell.
She was going on a trip, and she wanted to know in the airport, should she wear a mask?
Right. She wanted his expert opinion, as it were.
What should I do?
And then finally, there was an email from you to Sylvia Burwell, the former HHS secretary, that had to do with masks. And this is getting a great deal of attention. And the date here is February 5th, which I think is hugely important. She apparently had asked you whether she should wear a mask on a trip, and you responded to her, concluding, I do not recommend that you wear a mask, particularly since you are going to a very low-risk location. That was February 5th. Right. A lot has transpired right since then. If you had to go back and do it all over again, would you tell her something different? Do you regret that?
Well, you know, John, let's get real here. If you look at scientific information as it accumulates, what is going on in January and February, what you know as a fact, as data, guides what you tell people and your policies. If March, April, May occur, you accumulate a lot more information and you modify and adjust your opinion and your recommendation based on the current science and current data. So, of course, if we knew back then that a substantial amount of transmission was asymptomatic people, if we knew then that the data show that masks outside of a hospital setting are actually do work when we didn't know it then. If we realized all of those things back then, of course, you're asking a question, would you have done something different if you know what you know now? Of course people would have done that. That's so obvious.
What he said, he told colleagues that masks you buy in a store will do nothing to prevent the spread of the virus. That's what he said. That is what is in the email, folks.
Right. He mentioned something that we've talked about a lot, including with real doctors, practicing doctors, not
patients.
TV doctors, that in the email communicated about the particle size of the virus and that masks wouldn't be effective in preventing the particles of that size from penetrating the mask.
He did in that same email to Sylvia, though, say that if you are sick, it prevents you from spreading it to other people. But that's not true. I mean, it's just a bunch of, you know, knee-jerk reactions.
On the mask issue, the follow-up should have been, really, that's what we know to be true. You're sure you're not just saying, oh, this, you know, he has a story he's going to tell, which is there are things that we thought, even though the statements he made at the time and really throughout have been made generally speaking with moral certitude and certainly translated without any pushback from Fauci by politicians, particularly the COVIDian lockdown variety of politicians, as gospel, as having been received on tablet form from on high. That's how they've been announced and that's how they've been treated by the decision makers. Whatever Dr. Tony Fauci says.
Oh, yeah.
He's the Oracle of Delphi, right?
Well, the left believed him as he was a saint. I mean, every Democrat that's lives in a blue state, when he said, you know, Fauci knew that children were not at risk, and he continued to advocate for closed schools. So everyone on the left, every Democratic governor, oh, yeah, well, no, well, Fauci said, so we should keep our schools closed or let, you know, the superintendents decide, but it's a risk. When he knew damn well it wasn't a risk. He knew what they were doing in Europe, going to school full time without masks. He knows he knew it, but he didn't care about our kids.
So Fauci on what he's saying now and this, you know, of course I would have given a different advice to Burwell if I knew then what we know now about mask wearing. Okay, well then explain this to me, Tony. Explain the study out of San Diego State from last month that found that Governor Abbott's order banning mask wearing had practically no effect on COVID-19 cases. The predictions of reopening advocates and opponents failed to materialize, according to the authors. These are, you know, public health researchers at San Diego State. the headline in an Atlantic piece. This is May 21st. This is, you know, 2.5 weeks ago. The Texas mask mystery. We know definitively what Tony Fauci is saying as of yesterday, that we know definitively about mask wearing. No, we don't. No, we don't. And we've gone through it on this show before. I'm happy to repost it. A full index of all of the studies on mask effectiveness, including ones that have been somewhat high profile, although a great effort to tamp them down, like the study out of Denmark, randomized controlled trial with 6,000 participants, published in the Annals of Internal Medicine in November of last year, found no statistically significant effect of high-quality medical face masks against COVID-19 in a community setting. So it's remarkable to me. I mean, it's not remarkable because I understand that these individuals are just at MSNBC and CNN are just interested in promoting Tony Fauci's fairy tales. But this is easily pushed back on. And I hope the next time he's before a House or Senate committee for testimony that some Republican there, Rand Paul, maybe some people can join Rand Paul in the effort, John Kennedy in the effort, would just present these. You make these pronouncements. You say these are the things we've learned, and you would go back and say different things. Well, what about what we have learned? Or at least there's scholarship on the topic that needs to be addressed. It can't just be dismissed. If you repeat something different enough times, it just becomes fact, and we just get to dismiss all of the scientific research on the topic? No. No, I don't think so. There's something else that he said, too, about what we know now definitively that we didn't know then, and thus my advice would have been different. Asymptomatic spread. Does anybody remember the June 7th pronouncement of Dr. Maria Van Kerkhove?
Oh, yeah. Remember you and I were like, we're going to go take down all the, you know, stand here poly spots that were on the ground. Remember that?
Yeah, the idiot circles.
Yeah.
Head of the WHO's Emerging Diseases and Zoonosis Unit. Not just some, you know, flunky there. Right. She's the head of the relevant agency within the World Health Organization. She had this to say at a press conference about asymptomatic spread.
What proportion of asymptomatic individuals actually transmit? So the way that we look at that is we look at these individuals need to be followed carefully over the course of when they're detected and looking at secondary transmission. We have a number of reports from countries who are doing very detailed contact tracing. They're following asymptomatic cases, they're following contacts, and they're not finding secondary transmission onward. It's very rare. And that much of that is not published in the literature. From the papers that are published, there is one that came out from Singapore looking at a long-term care facility. There are some household transmission studies where you follow individuals over time and you look at the proportion of those that transmit onwards. We are constantly looking at this data, and we're trying to get more information from countries to truly answer this question. It still appears to be rare that an asymptomatic individual actually transmits onward. What we really want to be focused on is following the symptomatic cases. If we followed all of the symptomatic cases, because we know that this is a respiratory pathogen, it passes from an individual through infectious droplets. If we actually followed all of the symptomatic cases, isolated those cases, followed the contacts and quarantined those contacts, we would drastically reduce. I would love to be able to give a proportion of how much transmission we would actually stop. But it would be a drastic reduction in transmission.
Very rare.
Very rare.
And of course, this was, you know, immediately greeted with howling from the COVIDian lockdowners.
Right. Well, it's the whole reason people weren't in school is because of asymptomatic spread. It didn't fit their narrative. I mean, what's going on? The left hand's not talking to the right hand. What do you mean? It was shocking news to the left.
So that was from the top person on infectious disease at the WHO in June. Then, if you recall, but let me just make a parenthetical statement here. Why is this so important? To go back and recall all the things that were said and all the studies that were filed in the face of what is being said today. Because Tony Fauci and the COVIDian lockdowners are trying to rewrite the history of the policy choices they made and the implications. They're trying to rewrite the bases of those policies to say, we were working with the best knowledge we had at the time, and we made the most enlightened decision at the time. Now we know things to be true that resulted in our evolution of policymaking over the course of the last year plus, and we acted in the best interests of humankind with the knowledge that we had. But that's not true. And it's important that people understand and share the fallaciousness of what you're hearing from Tony Fauci and these COVIDian lockdowners. Because if you don't, if we don't, if they get away with this, then it's going to happen again. So in addition to Van Kerkhove's statement, Tony Fauci's good friends, the Chinese communist scientists. A study in November of 2020 that we talked about. Of 10 million people. Stringent COVID-19 control measures were imposed in Wuhan between January 23rd and April 8th of 2020. Estimates of prevalence of infection following the release of restrictions could inform post-lockdown pandemic management. And what did they find? All city and just a little bit more. All city residents aged 6 years or older were eligible, and 92.9% participated. That's 9.9 million people. There were no positive tests among 1,174 close contacts of asymptomatic cases. None.
Not one.
There was no documented case of asymptomatic spread in this study of 10 million people in Wuhan. And now we're to take Tony Fauci. If we knew about asymptomatic spread then I would have told former HHS Secretary Burwell to wear her mask. Of course, the premise is asymptomatic spread is a real thing and a real means of significant transmission. And you had the WHO recognizing that not to be the case in June. And you had this expansive study out of China in November of 2020, finding that not to be the case either. But it persists. Lewis on the South Side.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. I'd like to make a comment first, and then I want to make a statement. This comment is that Dr. Fauci is playing an old game. And the name of this game is called Hold My Beer. Okay. Now, this is my statement, okay? Jill Fauci, she made a statement, and this is the statement right here. There is no honor amongst thieves. Are you not yet entertained yet?
Thanks for the call, Lewis. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
The more you listen, the more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Axios reporting yesterday. I'm quoting. Cases in the U.S. are low, and they're likely to stay low, which is why, after 56 weeks, this will be the end of our weekly COVID map.
Oh.
It's like your neighbor who takes down their Christmas decorations in June.
Some still have them up, Dan, and I'm not making that up.
Yeah, well, then some people are still wearing hazmat suits, too.
So, yeah, they sure are.
That's attendant to a free country. The question, though, is where we're at, because Axios, this is an establishmentarian D.C. press corps outlet, and they're ready to give this wrap up. But yet so many COVIDians, both in the public health community, in Congress, in governor's mansions, are not. They're still issuing dire threats about variants and the like.
Yeah, the Vietnam variant is what we have to worry about now. But yesterday they announced Chicago, we're 3 weeks early. We're 3 weeks premature. We're going to open up everything. Phase 5 starts on Friday in congruent with the states opening up everything, which means 100% capacity at the Cubs, at the Cell, or for the White Sox games. Restaurants no more 6 feet apart. Everything's going back to normal, except for the fact that our kids aren't in school still Monday through Friday, and they still have to wear masks.
For more on, again, let's get a professional opinion on where we're at. And since Dr. Who is unavailable, we'll go to Dr. Chad Savage. He's the founder of Your Choice Direct Care, policy advisor for the Heartland Institute. He doesn't have a TARDIS, but he is a practicing physician, which is more than you can say about Tony Fauci. Dr. Savage, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, geez, I didn't know I was going to come on a show where they're picking on Christmas decorations. My goodness.
Right, exactly. This is a tough crowd. So, you know, you're hearing and seeing the political as well as public health statements about where we're at with this pandemic. Many practicing doctors and public health experts, like, I don't know, Marty Makary, Johns Hopkins, said mm-hmm. 2 months ago this thing is over. But there are still many unwilling to loosen their grip. Where do you think we're at?
Yeah, well, actually, if I can compliment Marty on his predictions, he actually wrote in an op-ed at that point that he thought it was really going to tail off quite a bit in April. And I think with the exception of my own state, Michigan, that largely was proven true. And what you see a difference between Marty and the general, political intellectuals, the healthcare establishment, is that he actually postulated a hypothesis that was potentially falsifiable. I mean, if he had speculated it was going to start tapering off in April and that proved to be wrong, I mean, he would be everyone would be publicly aware that he made a false prediction, which doesn't invalidate him, but at least he put himself up to potential falsifiability, where Fauci just jumps all over wherever the political whims are of the day. And unfortunately, I believe he is 3 hours into his 15 minutes of fame.
Well, he's still got a children's book coming out about him, so that's more than Marty Makary can say for himself. Yeah.
Yeah, a documentary crew has been following him around for a year, so you can expect that too. And then he's got a book that's coming out.
Yeah, which I understand Amazon actually it took down the pre-orders, which is kind of interesting. But you always wonder when you get someone who is, you know, maybe within his field well known, but generally to the public, was not known prior to this, and then suddenly overnight becomes one of the most well recognized faces in the entire world. What does that do to someone? Motivation and psychology. I mean, did they continue to hold true to their desires to just simply convey the correct information, or does this become a moment of self-aggrandizement? And I think he's come dangerously close, if not exceeded that threshold into the self-aggrandizement.
So for those who seek your medical expertise and want to talk to you about COVID as well, I mean, what is the attitude? I mean, this is anecdotal, but it's still interesting. Mm-hmm. The attitude and how have you seen that evolve or devolve over the last year?
Well, it's quite remarkable the plurality you get from everyone, from people who deny that it's a real thing, and clearly it is, to people who believe it's true Armageddon, which I don't believe it is either. And the truth can actually lay, and likely does lay, somewhere between those two. And it's interesting how it's gone from a purely medical issue to a social, political, psychological issue. In Michigan, you guys, apparently out there, you guys still have your mask mandates. They just lifted the mask mandates, at least if you're vaccinated in public spaces out here in Michigan. And that first day, I'm vaccinated, and I went into Meijer, one of our big stores here locally, was excited that next day, thought I would come into a sea of people unmasked, because clearly a majority of the people here in Michigan have already been vaccinated. But now, several weeks into that, still, I the other day, I was the only person in that store unmasked. And I know that many people were masked who were masking that store had received the vaccine. And now that is, where previously the explanation from that is, well, this is the science, you're being uncaring for other people. Well, the science has clearly indicated that is no longer necessary, and yet people continue to cling onto the mask, which shows that it's gone into the psychological realm, that people are scared to take it off. And this was one of my concerns in the early parts of the pandemic. My wife's a pediatrician, and she and I talked about this, and my worry was, if this became anything other than exceedingly temporary, these recommendations, that they weren't going to be the unusual thing, but they were going to become the new norm, which was hard to shatter. And I think that's very much where we are.
Well, you know, Michigan was Illinois' punching bag for a long time, for a few months there, because your numbers were so high. And, you know, Dr. Awardi, our Chicago Public Health director, kept saying, we don't want to be Michigan. We don't want to be Michigan. So what happened in Michigan?
Well, you know, the number spiked, which was interesting, and our governor actually blamed Florida, so everybody's got a punching bag,
really?
I guess. And yet
Florida
remained low.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and even though she told us during when we had the highest numbers in the nation, she was warning people not to go to Florida. Well, if anything, Florida should have been warning Floridians not to come to Michigan or to prevent us from going down there. And that was right around the time of spring break. And they were warning of the variants and everything else. And Florida was doing actually quite a bit better than Michigan. And as she was warning Michiganders not to go to Florida, she herself jumped on a private plane, as you may be aware, and flew to Florida, which she intentionally tried to obscure, was on a privately funded plane. Then she tried to claim that it was being funded through her campaign for unknown reasons, that she did that to go visit her sick father, for whom she was denying other people to see their sick relatives, telling people not to go to Florida, said it was for 2 days once she finally did reveal it, and then apparently actually was more with four. So it's just dishonesty after dishonesty, which is a little disconcerting from someone who's a leader. And you know, people, she has blamed us repeatedly for the reasons our numbers went up was our failure to comply with her mandates, as she's not complying with them herself. So it's unclear why we specifically jumped at that time, but it's quite clear that it's probably not because of noncompliance with the mandates. Actually, we had quite a big, you know, again, even to today, people continuing to wear masks and socially distance, and there's hand sanitizers at every entry to every store. And yet we did worse than other states that were open. So that can beg to the question is whether or not these interventions actually were beneficial at all.
Yeah, I think it can, most certainly. And this is why Florida is so important. I mean, there were other states that took a light touch approach, but none as diverse and populated with areas of significant density like Florida. And so the Florida example turns out to be a key in comparison contrast. And it turns out to be a real albatross around the necks of governors like the Eva Perón of East Lansing up there in Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. They talk about the states as a laboratory of democracy. Well, apparently they're also just simply a laboratory. I mean, you're getting control groups, which are Florida and South Dakota and places like that. And when you can compare, we can say, well, you know, well, Michigan's colder, so maybe the virus transmits better in cold weather than in warm weather, which actually may be true. So you could, you know, make that rationalization why Michigan was worse. Of course, Ohio, which is, you know, simply miles away from where we are up in the Ann Arbor area, you know, is doing much better than Michigan is with more open policies. And yet you can compare Florida with its warm weather to California with its warm weather, and Florida with an older population. So they should theoretically be worse since COVID, you know, more directly affects the elderly, infected better than California. So it's a great compare and contrast, and essentially functions as a control group as to whether these interventions were of benefit. And boy, the data sure suggests when you compare similar areas and that those interventions are not necessary. And even when you compare the same area over time, when these mandates were implemented and when they were not, it's very hard to predict based on looking the case graphs for specific areas. You can't predict based on when the spikes occur and when they declined, when mask mandates and the like went into effect, suggesting they probably, if they had any effect, it was probably on the margins.
I have a friend who works for Pediatrust. You mentioned your wife is a pediatrician. And this is sort of a story that raises the issue of what the culture in doctors' offices and medical facilities is going to be coming out of this, as politicized as the profession has now become. And he refused to take the vaccine. He's not going to get vaccinated. He's in his 20s, doesn't need it, doesn't want it.
Mm-hmm.
It's optional, but it's not really optional. It's optional, but you're getting, you know, he's getting the full court press from HR, from the principal doctors in the relevant office, attempting to force him to take a class to warn about the dangers of not being vaccinated and so on and so forth. And I wonder if the medical profession is going to take the position of politicians, which is to say, we're going to organize how we operate around those who are the most fearful, the safetyists. That's how we're going to organize. It doesn't matter what the science is. It doesn't matter what the risk profile is. We're just going to organize around those who are COVIDian ideologues.
Yeah. Well, I would argue that the safetyist is not an accurate descriptor, because we actually don't know. That's the problem with the young, is that we actually don't know what the ideal approach is, despite the somewhat dishonest framing of the argument that we absolutely know that the vaccine is safer than the disease. It's very probable that when all is said and done, and in future years we look back, that acquiring COVID was, you know, the actual virus was worse than getting the vaccine as a child. But if we're going to be intellectually honest, that we can't say we know that with certainty yet. I mean, just recently, I mean, they held the J&J vaccine because clots were discovered. You know, Pfizer, they're looking at myocarditis in Israel, which has a, you know, huge chunk of their population vaccinated, has identified about 280 cases of myocarditis caused by the vaccine, and myocarditis being an inflammation of the heart. And is one of the, you know, complaints of, well, if you get the infection, you can get myocarditis. Well, now apparently if you get the vaccine, you can get myocarditis. Now, understand, 270 cases out of 5 million vaccines administered is not a large number, but also myocarditis amongst those infected with COVID is also not a large number. And we are over 20 times the size of Israel. So, you know, which is more prevalent? I would intuitively suspect that the vaccine causes less of it than the infection, but we don't actually know that. So we have to be intellectually honest with people when addressing these. And that's why choice is so important. You know, I think how they're going about the vaccine is incredibly wrong if they want people to believe in it and comply with it. Instead of having that open, honest discussion with people, their belief is that if you have doubts about it, what we're going to do is shut down any opposing viewpoint that you could read or hear from, and therefore you'll believe us because we're the only opinion that you're able to hear. But instead, people have hesitations and they look for an opposing viewpoint and see that it's shut down and say, and their instinct is, what are they hiding?
But Dr. Savage, have you ever thought in your lifetime that you'd see these incentives to get vaccinated? Lotteries, gun giveaways, fully loaded trucks. I mean, I just never thought that would happen. It sounds like a bad movie.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, that should, we talked about this actually last time I was on with you, Amy. You were talking about having your children go to get the vaccine, and you had asked me, should I tell them not to do it? And my answer was no. I mean, that's a personal decision, but they should be doing it for the right reason. They should be doing it to prevent themselves from getting sick, and that they truly believe that the vaccine is the ideal way to do it. They shouldn't be doing it because of coercion, that they're not allowed to go to their university. In our state, we're mandated, our kids are mandated to get nasal swabs if they participate in sports and are unvaccinated. They just recently said, if you are vaccinated, you can prevent that. So in translation, that get this vaccine or we're going to shove this thing up your nose repeatedly. You know, so these various type of coercions. We have kids who are not participating in sports, which is unhealthy. You know, they're more sedentary if they're not, because they don't want that kind of testing and are hesitant on the vaccine as of yet.
But see, this is my point about the safetyist, and I think it is the right term, because the safetyist is the person, out of an abundance of caution with respect to what we don't know, we're going to live our lives based on the worst case scenario, not based on the most likely scenario. And in response to what you said about doctors and what we don't know, they could just say, well, Dr. Savage, out of an abundance of caution, what we don't know about which presents more risk to young people, so we're going to err on the side of mass social distancing, pushing, if not mandating, the vaccine and so forth.
Mm-hmm. And that's going with the assumption that the intervention itself, whether the vaccine or masking, whatever, has no consequence. And that's a false argument. Even masking, though, you know, intuitively, it's probably not too dangerous to you. We actually don't know. There was at least one study, it was a small study, questionable quality. I don't know if it's going to prove to be true or not, but suggested that masking actually may increase your risk of spread. And again, if you look state to state, that's not disproven by the mandates and the graphs that look at the cases. Again, I don't know if that's going to prove to be true. And instinctively, I think that's probably not an accurate thing, but there is at least one study suggesting that could be the case. And beyond that, if, you know, most people are not masking as is being recommended. They're using masks repeatedly, disposable masks repeatedly. I think I may have mentioned to you guys before, I had a patient come in once with a paper mask, a medical mask, and she pulled it off. And as I looked in her throat, and she had numerous shades of lipstick on the inside of it, revealing to me that she had been wearing this thing for weeks. And she, you know, numerous shades of lipstick on it, day after day, putting the same mask on. Oh. It was filled with putrescence. You know, and is that healthy? It's funny because Fauci's book, if you actually see the cover of the one that's forthcoming, they have him putting on a mask and it has shades of green on it. And what it really looks like is a fungal culture.
It sure does.
And it's probably not that inaccurate, because that's probably actually, if we were to culture masks, and I think that'd be an interesting study to see somebody do, is actually take real world, go to a store, ask people to, you know, take their masks off and culture them. I bet you we would grow quite a bit of, unpleasantness from the inside of those masks.
Dr. Chad Savage, founder of Your Choice Direct Care and policy advisor for the Heartland Institute. Dr. Savage, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Wall Street Journal's Kim Strassel, who's a regular panelist on Bret Baier's special report. Good piece in the Journal. Good column, as usual, from her, explaining the Senate wall that the Biden agenda has hit, the combination of a ruling by the Senate parliamentarian, Elizabeth McDonough, that they cannot use the reconciliation tool as freely as Pagliacci Schumer would like, combined with Manchin and Sinema sticking to their guns and not agreeing to blow up the filibuster, as is the want of the more radical elements in the Democrat Socialist Party, leaves a big question. If they can't get things done piecemeal, the infrastructure, Green New Deal business, plus the Medicare expansion, plus, of course, the $6 trillion in spend, as outlined in Biden's budget last week, what are they to do? Can they do it in one fell reconciliation? Is that going to be possible? Could they get Democrats, enough Democrats to support that? Moderate Democrats a little jumpy about all the spending. Yes, there are such things in Congress in small numbers, but important numbers. For more on where that all stands, pleased to be joined again by our friend Bret Baier. Of course, he is the host of the aforesaid special report, Monday to Friday, 5 p.m. Chicago time on Fox News Channel. Bret, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Good morning.
Morning. So what about Kim Strassel's analysis and where the sort of balance of power with respect to strategy over the Biden economic agenda, spending agenda, really, tax and spending agenda, where that stands?
Yeah, I think, as usual, Kim is right on. She's got her finger on the pulse of where Capitol Hill is. I mean, talking to people behind the scenes, there is a bit of a buzzsaw that they're running into, not just Manchin and Sinema, but other Democrats. Privately, there's probably five or six who have a problem with some of the massive spending proposals that they've kind of thrown out there in this blueprint of this budget. And I think that you will have people like Mark Kelly in Arizona, who's up for re-election coming up. You will have other people who may have voted with Biden a lot. Even Manchin and Sinema have voted with the Biden administration 100% of the time so far, but they are already indicating they will stand and make a stand. If push comes to shove over getting rid of the filibuster. So I think that's why you're starting to see the president back down on this negotiation with Shelley Capito from West Virginia. Indications are that they've kind of scaled back what they're looking for in this first infrastructure bill, and the taxes are cut way back on corporate taxes. So we'll see.
And with respect to that, too, it seemed that Biden expressed some frustration when he, without naming them, essentially named them Manchin and Sinema and the filibuster. So to name them publicly like that as sort of impediments to the grand vision was sort of an interesting tell this week.
Yeah, but you know what? He was wrong. I mean, he said, right. And two of them who vote more times with my Republican colleagues. Well, I mean, you go back to the fact check. 100% of the votes so far. Sinema and Manchin have voted with the Biden administration. So, I don't know. Maybe don't put that in the teleprompter.
Don't tell him that.
Well, he likes to throw those things out, too. He also is fond of talking generically about all the Republicans who support all of his tax and spending plans and other plans as well, without really providing any definition to exactly who those Republicans are.
Yeah, well, the White House likes to say it's bipartisan because some poll somewhere says Republicans in the middle of the country agree that they like getting, you know, a stimulus check or something. And that is their definition of bipartisan from seeing a poll that polls people, Democrats and Republicans.
Could Biden, you talked about the meeting with the West Virginia senator and scaling down their infrastructure, Green New Deal vision. Could they pull a bit of jujitsu? I mean, it may be that Senate Republicans are proposing something that's more modest, just to propose something to look constructive. But there's going to be a lot of pressure on Republicans to not vote for anything because so many conservatives are exhausted by all the spending by both parties over the last 15 months. And doing something smaller may put a lot of Republican senators in a trick bag who will feel pressure from their constituents.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there is some of that. But, you know, we're always one election away from solving the big thing. So infrastructure is usually something that Democrats and Republicans can get around, despite concern about how it's going to be paid for. And, you know, they're tiptoeing through the tulips here. I mean, if they go too far towards the Republicans, they start losing progressive votes who think you should be going big and bold and push it through with the numbers that they have. So I think it's going to be a coalition here, and there'll be some moderate Democrats, there'll be Republicans, but they'll lose some progressives and some conservatives. All they have to do is get to 60.
Brett Baer, good to hear from you again. It's been a while. I wanted to ask you about Dr. Fauci's email. I know there's 3,000 pages, a lot to get through, but what did you find most egregious?
Well, first of all, I saw this thing from Tom Fenton in Judicial Watch where they have forwarded emails, and were told by government officials that the reason it was taking so long is because Dr. Fauci was going through each email and reviewing it. In his requesting time, this is Judicial Watch, he said, I haven't heard of a government official going through and being involved in a FOIA release like that. I thought, you know, there were some things redacted that I would have liked to have seen. His reaction to the conspiracy thing, linking to our first story in April that said that U.S. officials increasingly suspected that it was a lab leak, maybe an accident from the Wuhan lab. And, you know, I listened to these interviews, and there is this straw man that the conspiracy was a bioengineered virus, and really that's not what we were talking about at all at the time. In fact, specifically those sources that were talking to us were saying that they didn't think it was bioengineered, but that it may have been adjusted or somehow been investigated inside that lab and escaped.
Yeah, and it's interesting that that Fenton referenced to Fauci wanting to examine all the emails before being released, because in his interview with John Berman on CNN yesterday, he had no recollection of that email about conspiracy theories with those redactions that you were describing from between him and Francis Collins, the NIH directory. You know, there's so many emails, Brad, who can remember what was said in one specific one.
I just think there's more to the story. And, you know, for what's so egregious is that it was this groupthink at the beginning. And for some reason, and I don't know, I can't, you know, I can speculate, but for some reason, government officials at the highest level wanted to squelch that. And that's not what science is about, if you're going to talk about going after the science.
Well, and Fox News had the story yesterday about the State Department officials that were trying to put the kibosh on any inquiry into origins in January.
Yeah. And so why is that happening? What? You know, what's the motivation? You can get down a road, you can explain it in your head, but I would like to know definitively, you know, who was behind that? Why did it happen? And is it tied to, you know, what we invested in that lab, even though they said they didn't realize it was gain of function research?
Well, how soon before? Yeah.
The aforesaid Francis Collins, NIH director, was on with our colleague Hugh Hewitt yesterday, and it was interesting to see the subtle but perceptible move in position on this. He told Hugh, the amount of money that we were providing the Wuhan Institute of Virology was a tiny fraction of their total funding, and we had no control over what they were doing with those funds. That's another thing we'd like to know more about, an investigation might potentially tell us. So all of a sudden now Francis Collins, like Tony Fauci, is interested in an investigation to find answers to these questions when they were not so inquisitive for most of the last year.
No, in fact, they said it's impossible. And that was another conspiracy theory that listed the U.S. funded this lab and whatever research it was doing. And in fact, that's the case, in part through another entity. And that entity, the guy tied to that, is in this email chain with Fauci. So the whole thing needs more investigation, and we're going to continue on it.
Well, how soon before, you know, there's a House committee or congressional committee to provide more answers with Dr. Fauci, where he has to testify under oath on this?
Or how about a Dr. Fauci interview by Brett Baer?
Oh, that would be good, too. Well,
we're working. We're working on it. It was easy to get early on. It's uh-huh. not as easy today. Uh-huh. I think there's a hearing coming soon. There's a real clamoring up on Capitol Hill to continue this.
Well, I don't know if you heard, but his pre-order sales for his new book have been yanked on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I didn't hear that.
Maybe you could do a book exchange to get him on the show. You could give him his FDR book, and he can get you one of those Dr. Fauci coloring books.
There you go. It's all incentive-based.
Yeah, right. All right, so on a lighter note, I've got a golf matter to take up with
boy.
You.
Oh, yeah.
So
I had the pleasure of playing in an outing a few weeks back with your father-in-law, who just a ton of fun. What a great guy he was. That was so much fun to play with him.
Paul Hills.
Paul Hills is a great, great guy. It was great to talk to him, too. Good to get to spend that much time with him. And he conferred on me a Brett ball. Brett Baer golf ball with the Baer family crest on it. And so I just want to know, you know, what I have in my possession. How many Bitcoin is that Brett Baer golf ball worth?
That is a rare commodity. So my son, Paul did this thing where you do an internet, you pay a couple $100 and they have a contest, like a logo contest. And so people compete and come up with this logo. And so he put it out there and came up with this logo that we said looked pretty cool. It's a, you know, B with a bear on it. And so that became the logo. We got the golf balls. It is a very rare commodity. So yeah, I don't know the Bitcoin price, but it's a rare commodity.
I have it in a
don't
bulletproof case.
Don't hit it in
case.
The water.
No, I have it in a bulletproof case right now.
It's in a shadow box. Really.
I'm just trying to get market value. Also, you know, I'm on radio. I'm not on Fox TV. So could your son pay a couple $100 to get a Proft logo ball going, see what that comes up with? Could he work
Let's
on that?
Let's do it.
It could be a summer project.
Brett Baer, Fox News anchor.
He tapped his father for the couple $100.
Sure, absolutely. Brett Baer, Fox News anchor, special report, 5 p.m. Chicago time, best-selling author of 3 Days at the Brink, FDR's Daring Gamble to Win WW2. Brett, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
See you.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, a point of personal privilege, I wanted to offer a public thank you to Debbie in Wilmette, who's a regular listener of ours, Amy.
Now, what'd she buy you now?
She didn't buy me anything. She was very concerned about me, and I heard this from her friend Shirley in Reynolds, Georgia. Uh-huh. Very concerned about me when I was absent on Friday and Tuesday. And she wanted to know where I was to make sure that everything was all right. And it'd be nice if more people expressed that sort of concern about my goings on. So
well,
I appreciate
are you okay?
Debbie
so
and Wilmette.
Were you playing in a golf tournament? Just
yeah,
taking
playing
some
golf.
Time off?
Okay. Yeah, I was playing golf.
That's what you do.
Yeah.
So you are.
Me and Brett Baer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's where I was.
I know how you roll.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity, this afternoon at 2 on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And we've talked about brain injuries related to sports. We've talked about brain injuries related to military service, PTSD, CTE. Of course, we had this discussion just recently, unfortunately, with the terrible news that Steve McMichael, the Bears great, had been diagnosed with ALS, and talking about some of the research out of Boston University that links repeated concussions to a higher incidence of ALS, which we've seen in football players, not just Steve McMichael, but of course
Gleason, yes,
as well as others, former Oakland Raiders running back, his name is escaping me now, and even going back to Lou Gehrig. It's really interesting. And so the continued research in this area and the development of treatments or even better cures continues to be a hot topic, as it should be. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Eric Stofers, who's a pioneer and innovator in the area of stem cell therapy, research and founder of BioAccelerator, a leading stem cell therapy and research company. And he has, per his stem cell therapy project, a lot to say on the topic. Eric, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks, Dan and Amy.
So what does stem cell therapy and sort of the research that you're doing as an entrepreneur, ostensibly with a team of medical researchers, what promise does it hold for those suffering from PTSD or CTE?
Yeah, there's some very, very promising results. And, you know, there's still some early stage development. But essentially, you know, stem cell therapy in general helps promote healing. And it does things like improve immunity, and really what it does is amplify your body's own natural ability to fight disease and heal more quickly. And what we've been able to do at our company is really harness the focus of those stem cells and the focus of the amplification to fighting things that are more neurological in nature. So we do that through an intrathecal application, which is a little bit more invasive than what you're seeing around the world and with other companies. But what that essentially does is it helps combat things like ALS. Potentially, ALS is a much tougher position. So, that's very, very early on. But you had mentioned PTSD and some of the things that we see in our high-impact athletes, like our NFL players and our UFC fighters. And we see this, unfortunately, a lot with veterans as well, because they're receiving multiple concussions on sometimes a daily basis. But we target the stem cells to directly go into the spinal column to pass the blood-brain barrier and work on the brain.
Wow. And does it reduce the swelling in the brain?
Yeah, that at its basic sense, what the stem cell does is it modulates your immune system. But to your point, Amy, is it also reduces inflammation, which is your body's own natural, signaling to start fighting disease and healing. But yes, it reduces inflammation, and that's the core of what it does for the neurological conditions.
And so, what is it that you've identified that has been missed up until this point?
Well, as far as some of the things that we're talking about, treating PTSD with veterans, the CTE, you know, the potential treatment of CTE, unfortunately, that is something that is still pretty much only diagnosed post-mortem. But there are symptoms that go along with it, and there are symptoms that mimic PTSD. But really what it is it's traumatic brain injury, and it's either multiple mild traumatic brain injuries or, you know, maybe one. We see a lot of major trauma as well. And so what that does is it starves the brain for oxygen. The brain is essentially rattling around in your head, causing that trauma. And then it creates an incredible amount of inflammation, which does not allow the brain to heal properly. And so by reducing that inflammation and then also sending sometimes hundreds of millions of new pure and potent stem cells into the brain to start repairing the brain and fighting the inflammation. Really, it's stimulating your body to do its own natural work. Your body is still the miracle. We're just accelerating that, so to speak.
And there's a specific stem cell from a piece in Maxim. There's a specific stem cell that you're utilizing.
Use the mesenchymal stem cell, and we do that through sourcing of the umbilical cord. And there's a specific piece on the umbilical cord. It's a really small 2-inch by 2-inch piece called a Wharton's jelly piece. But this is, you know, non-controversial. This is healthy moms and healthy babies going home and living healthy lives together. They donate the cord to great scientific companies like ours, and we're able to use those pure and potent stem cells to help, in some cases, thousands of people with just one cord.
Well, that's good, because I still have two if we want to donate to you, can we? I got two from my children, or should we save those for down the road?
Yeah, our process is pretty strict, so we have to know a lot about the mother and the father and a lot of testing that goes into it long before we ever take a cord for donation. So I'm afraid that our company probably wouldn't take yours, but for your own family, it might work.
It probably doesn't help that she just keeps the two in the freezer. So the punky QP known as McMahon, who has documented a case of brain injury and the resulting quality of life degeneration. He's a lot of profile on that, and there should be. He's involved in this project in some material way.
One of our patients, and so yeah, he's involved in the sense that he came down to our main treatment facility in Medellin, Colombia. He received the exact treatment that we're discussing, an intrathecal application of mesenchymal stem cells, and I believe he's on the docket to come back. I don't know his exact protocol. I'm not a physician at all.
Right.
On the business side, but I do have contact with Jim. I live out here in Scottsdale where he is, and he was going to join us today, but there's a little scheduling conflict. He'll come on next time if we're lucky enough to be on. And he's involved in the sense that he's a patient.
Well, do you know how it has changed his life?
Yeah, I do have some reports on that. I mean, he initially had some memory improvement. So there was a cognitive improvement with things like memory, and I believe there was also some mood stabilization that was important to him and his better half. That's typically how we end up first seeing our athletes is it's typically their wives or better their family members that report some mood issues and some things that mimic PTSD. But we're going to do a case study on him, and like I said, he's coming back, and we're going to be writing up a pretty thorough medical journal on his case.
For other patients that have accessed this treatment, I remember from McMahon, so this is not limited to him, but it's a good example. Also, the headaches, the blurry vision problems associated with the brain injury, are those things that you've seen improvement either with McMahon or with other patients?
Patients that were a little bit further along in the process. Matt Hughes, who is a very famous world champion UFC fighter, had a major, I'm sure through his career he had multiple concussions, but he had a major accident where he had traumatic brain injury because he was in a train accident. And so we've seen some fantastic improvements with him, motor skills, the blurry vision, the sensitivity to light, the cognitive improvement with the memory. So him and many, many others have definitely seen some improvement
symptoms
that you're talking about.
And so what's the process of pursuing this medical innovation and making it marketable, or I don't know, since it's so popular these days, maybe getting emergency use authorization from the FDA for the treatment? What's that process?
Good news is that the FDA has authorized this for compassionate care and emergency use authorization. We and other companies like ours have had clinical trials approved by the FDA through, and ours is approved through our equivalent of the FDA in Colombia. But the FDA has also approved clinical trials for research on COVID with stem cells, and so we know that they can fast track the approvals for, you know, things like the COVID vaccine or even stem cell clinical trials. But they're not doing it for a lot of indications that, you know, we would like to start helping people for here in the United States. It works fantastic for orthopedic injuries and autoimmune disease and you know, things like neurological conditions. So the process is still very cumbersome. You know, it could take decades, unfortunately, under the current process through the FDA.
And are you performing these in the United States, or did I hear you correctly say Colombia, as in South America?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, unfortunately, look, the FDA is a fantastic organization. They're here to protect us. They protect Americans every day. You know, so they're just, I think they're a little bit behind in their regulation on stem cell, because in science, in the scientific community, there is no longer a debate on whether or not stem cells are both safe and effective. And so, you know, in my company, people, you know, companies like mine are doing this every day. But unfortunately, to your point, Amy, yes, we have to perform the highest level science, meaning we want the best results for our patients. You have to go offshore, unfortunately, for this technology right now.
And you made a comment in a piece that your goal, it's beyond treating people with PTSD or traumatic brain injuries. Your goal is to make 100 years old the new 60 years old. And this is, I assume, all about the body's ability to repair and recover.
You know, unfortunately, we mostly see patients that are suffering from some type of chronic pain or injury or, you know, neurological condition. But we do have a lot of people that are educating themselves. They know that there is technology that is offshore. And so they're doing this as more of a preventative measure. And, you know, what we've dedicated our company to and our efforts is improving people's lives and promoting healing. So we have people that are coming in for systemic rejuvenation, we call it, but it's a health optimization and immunity and longevity booster shot, so to speak.
And so, I mean, and this is important too. This is not just about extending people's lives. It's also about improving their quality of life while you're extending it.
I mean, the extending of people's lives, I don't know. We can have this interview in 40 years and we'll see, you know, we'll see how we do on that. But the theory in science is certainly that longevity is a piece of this. But the most important part is definitely what you're mentioning. It's making the more advanced years, you know, better, just feeling better and living a healthier lifestyle into the later years.
He is Eric Stofers, international pioneer and innovator in the areas of stem cell therapy, as he was describing, and founder of BioAccelerator, leading stem cell therapy and research company. Eric, thanks so much for joining us. We'll be watching to see how your company and this treatment develops. Appreciate your time.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, black fathers like Corey Yeshua are the critical ingredient for an antidote to the poison that is critical race theory. Listen to Corey Yeshua and his adorable daughter in this TikTok video they posted that has gone viral with millions of views.
Daddy teaches you can be anything in this world that you want to be, right? Don't daddy teach you that?
Yeah, and it doesn't matter if you're black or white or any color.
Doesn't matter if you're black, white, brown, yellow, right?
Black.
And how we treat people is based on who they are and not what color they are.
And if they're nice and smart.
See, this is how children think right here. Critical race theory wants to end that. Not with my children. It's not going to happen. My baby's gonna know that no matter what she wants to be in life, all she has to do is work hard, and she can become that.
Work hard even though you don't know anyone. You can make friends.
Yeah, you can make friends, no matter what color they are. So we need to stop CRT, period, point blank. Children do not see skin color, man. They love everybody. If they're good people, they love them.
We pray for people that are hurt.
So why is that so difficult for everyone to say?
I don't know.
What are you
it's
afraid
so
of
obvious.
In saying that? I mean, that is an indictment of critical race theory. That is the indictment of it. It's brilliant. And by the way, this is happening in Loudoun County, Virginia, too. You know, the wealthiest counties tend to be the worst when it comes to this poison in distributing it. Loudoun County, Virginia, parents banding together to fight racism. Fight for Schools is the name of the committee they've set up opposed to critical race theory. Fred Rigi, who is a black parent in Loudoun County. Critical race theory basically enforces or introduces an idea that sins of our great grandparents are still here with us and there's nothing we can do about it. It's, you know, the same sentiment. Paul Rossi, that math teacher from Grace Church School in Manhattan. I'm being told to treat my students differently based on their race. I won't do that. What is so difficult about telling other parents, telling administrators, telling school board members that we're not going to tolerate or participate in this intolerance?
Well, people are afraid of getting canceled or, you know, being ostracized by people in their community if they just stand up and say the truth like that father and daughter just did in that TikTok video.
Absolutely. Corey Yeshua, I hope it gets tens of millions, hundreds of millions of more views. Brilliant.
Oh, it will.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy and National Donut Day. Amy, why don't you scramble together a few bucks, maybe take a collection from everybody at the studio. And
yeah, hey, Toots, why don't you go out and get us some donuts, huh?
No, not us. No, let's be selfless on National Donut Day. Why don't you get a couple of dozen Benoits and deliver them over to Jelly Belly as sort of a peace offering to reconcile?
Oh, right, yeah, because, you know, he might be leaving soon. Gave that announcement. No, well, you don't think it's true. I think there might be trouble at home. Can I just tell you? Just Craig Wall, real quick. Craig Wall from ABC7 got called yesterday. I don't know why they chose him to get an interview one-on-one with Pritzker, Governor Pritzker at the Thompson Center. They talked about, you know, what this building's going to be used for. And then he slipped in that he might not run for office, folks.
It's a long decision process. This is a hard job. You know, it takes you away from your family quite a lot. That is part of the job that I haven't enjoyed, is being away from my kids, and my wife.
Yeah, my kids, and my wife.
All right, get a dozen Benoits for MK as well as JB.
Trouble at home.
Please, stop.
Well, I mean, come on. Is this a joke? This is a publicity stunt?
I mean, have you been in Chicago for 5 minutes? Have you been around politics for 5 minutes? This is a pathetic attempt to humanize him and get, oh, no, you got to do it. And he put $35 million into his reelection campaign already, and he's really wrestling with this. This is his whole identity. This is his singular accomplishment as a human being. This is the sash that he wears around. He's running for reelection. So just stop with the silliness and the Chicago press corps promulgating his press releases. Come on.
It wasn't a press release. It was like a secret one-on-one, and then Craig didn't even follow up with any hard questions. It was such a fluff piece.
Yawn. And what else is new? And the sun sets in the west again tonight. It is also May Jobs Report Day, and the numbers are in 559,000, a little below estimates of 675,000. Unemployment rate drops to 5.8%, but still well above the under 4% it was pre-pandemic. A sign of reopening, but are we reopening fast enough? For more on this, somebody who also loves a good Benoit, that is, or Benet, or Benoit. I'm confusing Benet with a former forward for the Utah Jazz, which a lot of people do. Pleased to be joined by Scott the Cow Guy Shalady, Fox Business contributor. Scott.
Good morning. You know what Pritzker calls 36 donuts, right?
A good start.
Breakfast.
Oh, you guys are
a good start.
Scott, enough with your fat phobia.
Cheap shots, yeah.
Yeah, right. It's outrageous. The May Jobs Report.
Never buy in this glass house.
The 559, we're reopening, but are we reopening fast enough?
25 states are. We've got 25 red states that are dropping this this pandemic top up, which those states have the lowest unemployment rates, and the ones that aren't doing it have the highest unemployment rates. Yes, we had 559,000 jobs given back. I'm not going to say created. They were given back because they were stolen in March. I can't stand that word, we created. And we're still way behind where we were as far as when we went into the pandemic. So we've got some jobs to make up, almost 7 million jobs still. So, yeah, we're getting, we're on the right track. But everybody still wants to talk about this inflation issue. The wages came in a little hotter. The unemployment rate did drop to 5.8, and the participation rate also dropped. So less workers. A lot of folks are trying to blame that on baby boomers retiring. I can see that. I would tend to lean that way as well. But then that means you're shrinking your labor force, which means you're going to see inflationary pressures when it comes to wages. And as well, you're paying people to stay at home. So America's, small businesses, I just feel so bad because, they were really hit hard by obviously having a shutdown, and they don't have the balance sheets to set, to survive a year-long closure, number one. But number two, now they've got the government competing for their, their employees and winning. And number three is that there's this inflation euphoria. So a lot of the things that they need to buy for their businesses are going through the roof and sometimes, doubling in price. And so they're getting killed on all ends, and they're just in the middle. And it's so sad to see that. And I don't know if the government really cares about it that much right now. They don't care about the wage inflation because they're passive aggressive and they don't want to be seen to be raising everything to $15 an hour. So they'll sit on their hands and wait till private business does it because they're so desperate and say, we didn't do it. Private business did it, just like the vaccine passport. They won't mandate anything on that. They'll wait till private business does it so they can say, we didn't do it. Private business did it. So we don't have any leadership. It's all passive aggressive. And we're just rudderless. And I think these numbers, while they're not, they're not too hot, they're not too cold, the market seems to be liking them this morning. But I tell you, we've got an issue about whether or not we have inflation or we just have, reopening euphoria. And I've been on the tour talking about it a lot, and I don't have a lot of people in my camp on this at all whatsoever. I say, yes, they threw a lot of money at the pandemic, and they had to because they made people stay home. But these people needed to eat and they needed to pay rent. I don't think a ton of that money went into the stock market or inflationary items, right? I think a lot of people used it, business and personal. But we also have this issue where we have a demand. Everybody hit the demands. We're reopening. So demand is instantaneous. I want it now, okay? Well, these supply chains were shut down sometimes due to – so you got to think that that's a conveyor belt of goods and services coming off that conveyor belt. And back when everything was running right, when we had all the planes, trains, trucks, and boats in the right places, that was no big deal. But now when you want a refrigerator, there's nothing coming off of the conveyor belt. They have to make it for you now. It's like 10 weeks, and then they have to send it to you. And so if there are any refrigerators around, people are paying through the roof to get them. Is that inflationary? And if the government had you shut down for a year and allowed you to reopen this Friday night at 6 o'clock and you could seat 150 people and 150 people showed up and all ordered at once, is that inflationary? I mean, we're getting confused whether this is an event or a trend, and the government's going to treat it as a trend because they want to tax it. I'm saying I think this is just an event, and we have to wait another 2 quarters to kind of let things kind of settle out, and you'll start to see it. I think stuff's already kind of coming off the boil. You started to see construction stuff kind of come down and new houses come down in numbers. And I think slowly but surely that'll be the case as we reopen and the euphoria goes away. So the government's got to be very careful. And I think that's what the Fed's doing here. They don't want to raise interest rates too quickly to kind of shut down this inflationary surge that they may or may not be seeing. Because I think that the Fed's kind of, and this is where I'm worried, I can kind of agree with what the Fed's doing right now. They're going to wait and see, because if they raise them too early, and this just was an event, which I think it was, not a trend, and Biden gets some of his tax hikes through, and we slip back down our normal GDP of 2.5%, that could cause a big problem.
So then your suggestion, if I'm interpreting this right, is to say, look, because of these supply chain bottlenecks, you're not going to, and the fact we're not going to get back to full employment until the goodies run out in the fall, sit back and wait until the private sector relieves these bottlenecks in supply chains and people are back to work, and then you'll see that inflationary pressure reduced.
Yeah, because yes, that's where I'm gonna I'll put my chips on that square, because the world is acting like we created a new technology over the pandemic that I'm not aware of. I mean, everybody's talking about how hot and how on fire everything is. Number one, no one on this earth has seen a $28 trillion economy, first of all, shut down and then restarted. So these economists are trying to judge it against these old metrics. You know, we better have rip your face off numbers, because we're starting the biggest, best economy of all time. So these things better be out of the park. We're not creating anything. I hate that number, but we're getting back to normal. And that's my issue, is that we're acting like we created a new technology and it's 1999 again, and we didn't. Yeah. I mean, who would have thought April 2020, a year ago, last April, would have been the best time to buy a house? I have vivid memories of sitting around the table talking to guys like, thank God I don't have any real estate. You know, I'm not long real estate. So it's perverse. That's what I'm trying to say. It's perverse.
So a good,
more euphoria. Go ahead.
So is a good example of what you're describing, the issue with microchips and the car industry.
I had a guy sitting in my office in January of this year saying that we're going to have a problem with microchips. And I said, why? He says, I consult for the big four automakers in the country. And I'm telling you right now, there's the microchips, that conveyor belt stopped.
Right.
Just like the conveyor belt of rental cars stopped. Actually, what worked, they actually sold them all. Okay, so the conveyor belt stopped for microchips. And when the conveyor belt started to heat back up again, this consultant said to me in January, the microchips in this world, 80% of them go to Silicon Valley, 10% go to automakers. So if you're a microchip guy, who are you going to keep happy, 80% of your customer base or 10?
Right, and so microchips are going to Nintendo products rather than cars, and with Taiwan Semiconductor basically being the monopolist in this, or certainly dominating the market. Now you're talking about restarting that, and microchips turn out to be complicated things that have long lead time, and then, as you said, supply chain has long lead times, and so it's going to take. It's a matter of months.
The unintended consequences of shutting down an economy of this size will have ramifications for the next 10 to 20 years. I'm just telling you right now, because we have to get, again, just think about those big container ships out there. We have to get all those ships in the right, I mean, In a small manner, when we used to shut down O'Hare because of snowstorms, shutting it down at night was a bad deal, right? But that was a pain in the butt. But really what was the bigger pain in the butt was in the morning, those planes weren't in the places they were supposed to be for the next day.
Yep.
That's what we're dealing with on a global scale. And it's going to take a little while for all of those conveyor belts and all of those planes, trains, ships, and trucks to get to where they need, and we start having that stuff kind of smooth out. And I think that's another 6 months away, maybe two quarters. But right now, because you can't get that microchip, and if you can, you pay through the nose for it. Is that inflationary? I don't think. I mean, I wouldn't build a business plan off of that. Okay, so that's why my eyes are telling me something that the rest of the world is not seeing, or at least I'm wondering. How can you call it inflation when we just have a short-term supply problem? Yeah. Now, yes, everybody's looking at the amount of money that they're throwing at this economy, as far as, you know, unemployment and PPP and all of those things. And that could lead to a small uptick in inflation. I'll give the people that. I understand that. I can see that. But where's the inflation issue with refrigerators? Or, you know, you can't get anything for your house. You can't buy sofas right now.
No. I mean, or air conditioning units. I'm having a hard time getting an AC because the parts aren't there. And then it went up because there's so few of parts that now you almost could pay double of what you're going to pay.
So everybody got their stimulus checks and they ran out and bought air conditioners. No.
Exactly. So, Scott,
that's why I'm saying you got to slow your roll here and let this kind of work out. And then if it is inflationary, raise rates in 6 months' time. But you also have to worry about what the taxes might look like, you know, down that road. So I think the Fed, I hate to say it, but I kind of agree with them right now.
All right. Well, you had mentioned, you know, that, you know, these weren't, you know, create jobs that were created. There were jobs that were given back.
No.
Were there any jobs that were created?
No, I don't know. I mean, even worse, I think we saw like construction jobs went down in this report. So there are some things that are coming off the boil. The only thing that isn't coming off the boil are wages are increasing. But I think that's because we've got this passive aggressive leadership that wants to be able to blame it on small business doing it on their own, not, you know, not from a government mandate of $15 an hour. And so when that starts to come up, you know, that's going to go away in September. 25 states are getting rid of it, have gotten rid of it already. And perversely enough, the 25 states that did it have the lowest unemployment rates, which is just amazing. But I think that it's going to take that time to get these things back in order. And remember, some of these supply chains not only were just shut down because of no business, but a lot of them got shut down because no business, and they had a lot of people got sick and they had to send them home. I mean, they had a big, big problem. So I want the world to kind of be greased a little longer before I'm going to call this inflation, because I still think, look, why do you think housing went through the roof? What happened? What changed in this world? Well, it's because I think we had a one-off exodus from big cities.
Right.
And the massive knock-on effect from that makes lumber go through the roof 300%. I mean, it's to me, it doesn't sound right. So that's why I say, if it doesn't sound right to me, or it's not commonsensical, I just want to slow my roll before I start making long-term decisions on a short-term problem.
How concerned are you about the yuan's appreciation against the dollar?
I'm not as concerned about that as I am about this economy being restarted right now. I think it's very vulnerable. And I'm much, much, much more concerned about these cyber attacks than anything else right now. I've been writing about it for about 2 weeks, but ever since that Colonial shutdown we had, yeah, that was, look, they came after our fuel. They came now after our food. Now, they're going to keep coming. This is going to happen again. And I cannot imagine, we've got our government now debating whether daycare and babysitting is infrastructure when behind them Rome is burning and they're not even noticing. Because if you want to keep with the alliteration with, you know, food and fuel, what about flights and finance? What if they come after our, you know, air traffic control, or what if they come after our ATMs? Nobody can get any cash out.
Well, I'm willing to go to war over not getting my bacon for breakfast. There's no question about that. But
I think that's a huge issue. Huge.
What about the huge spending that continues? Right now you have the UK and others in the EU starting discussions about exiting from their pandemic modern monetary policy and fiscal policies, whereas obviously the Biden administration, as we know, is looking at trillions more.
Well, that's going to be inflationary. That's what people are still talking about. And I think it's absolutely something that needs to be taken very seriously. And I am kind of worried about it, too. I think the way that we're spending money right now, and I was worried about it last year, too, is the fact, you know, what if we have another pandemic? And now that seems pretty far-fetched, right? But if, now that I'm reading all these Fauci emails and seeing how this actually happened, I mean, this could happen again. And now that we've bankrupted our country and other countries are bankrupting themselves to try to get out of this, we don't have any more money to have this happen again in the next 100 years. That's another big concern. What are we going to do? We won't be able to shut down. I mean, what are people going to do? So
you're going to run to a red state.
The answer to pandemics is not spending, but the government thinks it is, or it's a great excuse to spend. And I do, that does concern me. And I think that with what we've got on, I mean, that $6 trillion budget that they released on Friday is fantasy land. It's laughable. But they're going to use this for any reason to, and we're spending more money than we did in World War II. I mean, what people, when they really put it in a frame of reference, this is historic spending, which should make you quake in your boots, but I'm not quite sure you'll get a lot of it through, but regardless, we're going to get a lot of spending through, and we're going to get a lot of taxes through. And what's that going to do to your economy?
He is Scott the Cow Guy Shalady, Fox Business contributor. Scott, thanks as always.
See you. Thank you.
Right. Have a great weekend. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Open mic! Open mic Friday! Call in now! Open mic Friday!
We Yeah, Dan and Amy, it's Open Mic Friday. Grab a line, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line. If it's busy, be patient. We'll get through as many as we can, taking your calls with comments, concerns.
Well, I can't wait to hear yours. You like pottery. Jay Cutler.
Jay Cutler has redeemed himself in part, the oft-intercepted former Bears quarterback, in his divorce with Kristen Cavalieri. Cutler is seeking half of the business she started called Uncommon James, this lifestyle business, because the brand was launched during their marriage. That's marital property, baby.
Payback, so you know what? Well, it's true. It's legal. You can ask for it. Wow.
Look, absolutely. Why walk away from the Uncommon James cash to pile on to his NFL cash?
So that's why you like him? He's got up a notch in your book because of that?
I like him because he's a feminist. And I'm a feminist. So,
oh, right, yes.
We're cut from the same cloth, at least on the score of being a feminist. Isn't that fun?
Good for him. I wonder how much he's going to get.
We'll see.
They have three children together, too, so it's...
Marital property. Mm-hmm. You couldn't have done Uncommon James without Jay Cutler. Amish Texter and Huntley, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. Actually, Genoa City, Wisconsin, where I'm hoping to relocate soon, but that's another story. But, being an Amish Texter, you know, guys, that I am pretty discriminating in my use of technology.
Yeah.
But I recently started using an app to connect with someone who can satisfy my basic needs and urges. Tinder? No, Gas Buddy.
Gas Buddy?
Gas Buddy, where you can find the lowest priced gas for your Conestoga wagon.
Satisfy my basic needs and urges, you know?
All right, Amish, thanks for the call.
Dan, you didn't ask me what I wanted to get off my chest, but that's all right.
Correct, I did not.
Oh,
no, please, the floor is yours.
Oh, real quick, I owe Mayor Lightfoot a big thank you.
Because
I hounded her for a few weeks about changing the outdoor capacity for CPS so that schools that have 500 kids don't have to have five different graduations, and they changed it. Thank you. So we can have what other people have. Now we can have what selective enrollment high schools have.
They're not
that's
doing
a
the
full
segregated
graduation.
They're not doing segregated graduations.
No.
Black, white, Hispanic, gay, straight, etc.
No, they're not. It's all one graduation. But they had the money, so they rented out Soldier Field, so it was a larger area, so they could put all the students and then have four people invited, four tickets per graduate. And now we can have the same thing, so thank you.
Mm-hmm.
But we're doing it in a parking lot.
That CPS diploma.
Of Soldier Field. Yeah.
That CPS diploma is not worth those Great America tickets you get for being vaccinated. But okay, sure. You go ahead and celebrate mediocrity at best. Hate to break it to you. Mm-hmm. It's just the way it is. Life is unfair and unkind.
And then there's Dan Propt.
A stew in Downers Grove.
Hey, good morning, Stu. Everybody. How are you guys doing?
Morning.
I just want to give you the words of Nelson Muntz, Nelson Muntz for LeBron James. Ha ha.
Oh, because they're up.
I can go on to being a political commentator.
All right, but the question, Stu, is if the Lakers are eliminated from the playoffs and only Chinese communists see it, did it really happen? Who watches the NBA?
I don't. I've been actually watching more WNBA.
I hope that doesn't affect the launch of Space Jam 2 in the Chinese market. Maybe John Cena can rep him now that he's back in good stead with the Chi-Coms. Yeah. Tom and Oswego.
Hey, good morning, Danny and Amy. First of all, I love when you have Jim as a guest. He's got so much common sense.
Scott, the cow guy, Shalady.
Scott, I apologize. Yeah.
Jim, okay, yeah. Bob. All right, whatever, yeah. Steve.
Okay. Dan, I'm a small contractor. Right now, yes, things are on fire. But I also realize that once this euphoria and this incredible growth, I don't even call it growth, it's just getting back to normal. Once it gets back to normal, I'm worried about all these businesses that are increasing the pay and the benefits and all these incentives, because once we do get back to normal, they're stuck with those. And if the economy slows down or even levels off, a lot of them are going to be stuck with these costs that they didn't have before. They did it while things were really red hot. Well, everything slows down. There's cycles. And that's when I think a big problem is going to happen with businesses.
They're going to wake up and the economy's going to level off, and they're like, wow, we're paying guys $18 an hour to wash dishes. Mm-hmm. That's when a big problem is going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's going to be a price surge at restaurants.
Thanks, Tom.
They're going to have to pass it on to the consumers. There's no question, especially, too, with the meat prices going up. There's no way around it.
Let's keep hero pay forever.
Oh, hey, Dan, you know, what about you getting vaccinated so you can get a free beer or a shot at a restaurant or bar in Chicago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll take that under advisement. Mike in on the north side.
Good morning. Thanks for my call. Three quick things. Fauci has surpassed the boy who cried wolf. He's now the kid that starts the garbage fires and calls them in and acts like a hero. People are getting tired of his act. You should really stop fat-shaming the governor. He doesn't think he's fat. He thinks he beat anorexia. And if you watch what's going on in the Democratic, they're trying to put in Alexei Giannoulias as the next candidate for Secretary of State. If he wins, the top two people in the state, think about it, Pritzker and Giannoulias, come from families who are guilty of bank fraud. What does that say for the state?
It says that they're in the right state. Thanks for the call, Mike. Yeah. I mean, considering that fraud is committed by state government in Illinois every single day, every hour of every single day. But, yeah, that is nice after that $400 million bailout of the mob loan operation called Broadway Bank that Giannoulias could walk around town pretending to be an entrepreneur and now get slated to be Secretary of State. That's exactly right.
That's what he wants. They handpick the positions they want. And then, he couldn't be Kirk for senator, so there you go.
And then when Jelly Belly goes off and runs for president, then Ali G can run for governor, and he can be your governor. How you like that?
Mm.
Good times. It's getting better, though, in Illinois, because Madigan's gone.
Oh, yeah,
it's getting better, right?
It's all Madigan's fault, yeah.
Craig in Old Town.
Hey, Craig. Hi, Dan. Hi, Amy.
Hello.
As I've slowly done my... I'm sorry, guys. My time is off here.
Go ahead.
As I've slowly done my best to try to grapple with and come to terms with the utterly confounding and backwards behavior I've witnessed from everyone, but most disappointingly, my fellow Americans, and as I've slowly tried to begin to shake the odd feeling of waking up every morning in a sort of twilight in time where it almost feels as if I'm living in an alternate reality I only thought possible in a childhood daydream influenced by the sci-fi show I watched the night before, I've been working on a piece about Dr. Fauci and his Dr. Magoo Act and how, as I see it, he's been one of the cheapest bagmen of the last 50 years. But it got me thinking about some of the greater issues that not even Dr. Fauci could con his way into being the front man for. I was reminded of Stanley Milgram's social psychology experiments at Yale University in the early 60s, and I know we don't have time for the fine details, but Milgram summarized himself in a 1974 article he titled The Perils of Obedience. He said, ordinary people simply doing their jobs and without any particular hostility on their part can become agents in a terrible destructive process. Moreover, even when the destructive effects of their work become patently clear and they are asked to carry out actions incompatible with fundamental standards of morality, relatively few people have the resources needed to resist authority. And I know your listeners don't really need the lesson, but I encourage them to teach others about the perils of obedience, especially when it comes from places like the state. That's it.
Craig, I missed your calls. Another Craig classic. You know, I'll tell you, this is the reason I do this show, is to make sure people hear from people like Craig in Old Town out there that are actually thinking, synapses fully firing, and trying to provide some intellectual leadership within their circles. It's outstanding. And Stanley Milgram reference, too. Even better. Everybody goes back to McKay and popular delusions and madness of crowds, but Milgram's experiments, great, great example. Absolute present application. Very good. Craig gets an A. Elliot in Wilmette.
Well, great. Now you put me on after Craig.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you have?
Well, I've got just reporting from my vacation last weekend. I went to Michigan. Once I got there, nobody was wearing masks ever, never saw one. But going out, all the food places were closed, and coming back, they must have turned a switch because all the food places were open. But Indiana, everybody's wearing masks. Very, most surreal experience.
Hmm. Thanks for the reports from the front there, Elliot. Appreciate it. Rich in Indian Head Park.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Annie.
We got a munchkin line back. All right, we're going to, Rich, sorry, you're going to sound like a munchkin, but go ahead with the call.
Oh, that's okay. What I wanted to say, I have two questions, one for each of you. Amy, the question I have for you, do you feel cheated that you got vaccinated too early? I mean, after all, depending on where you live, you could have been in a lottery, you could have got free tickets to a theme park, and the best one is you could have got a shot in the beer.
Well, you can still show that vaccination card to get a free shot and a beer. The problem is the restaurant owners aren't going along with it because they're like, we've lost too much. We're not playing along this game. But it's a Senate Bill 104. It's an actual law. Somebody actually crafted the legislation and Pritzker signed it. So, no, and I do not regret getting my vaccination early because apparently when this lotto does start in Illinois, they're going to take people who have already been vaccinated and put them in the pot.
And Dan, my question for you is, when are you going to get, what's it going to take for you to be vaccinated? I know it's not going to take a shot in a beer, maybe a keg and a fifth, or maybe Pritzker could give you a trip to Pebble Beach to shoot around the golf. What's it going to take to get you vaccinated?
Thanks for the call, Rich. I'm worried about getting vaccinated because I'm worried I'm going to sound like Rich on line three, the munchkin line here on our show, and then people won't be able to tolerate my voice, and then I'll lose my phony baloney radio job. So, no, I'm not going to. I would consider it if Jelly Belly and or Ali G gave me the passwords to their offshore accounts.
Oh, okay.
I'd consider it then. Yeah. How's that?
Other people want Pritzker to resign, then they would consider getting a vaccination. That's what I heard.
Well, speaking of science, I just wanted to get this into an important study out of Portugal, Science and Data. The top line is that brain and testicles more alike than previously thought.
I knew it.
So, yeah.
Women already know this, but do go on. Okay, go on.
Well, brain and testicles more alike than previously thought. It's not so the whole, you know, men think with their junk.
Yeah.
Thinking with your junk is using your brain.
Oh, I see how you turn that. Okay.
Okay. Anthony in Naperville.
Hey, guys. How you doing this Friday morning?
Good.
Hey, I'm halfway around Chicago right now. I'm a young conservative. I got my quote-unquote vax passport. Just kidding, but I'm taking advantage of all the free stuff, you know, if they're all offering it, why not? Jelly Belly's got free, the White Sox handing out $25 credits. You could get free Great America passes, you know, why not take advantage of all this stuff? But no, it's just ridiculous that it's boiling down to this and, you know, the Democrats really are trying to force a vaccination hand. And I know Amy gave a shout out to Lori Lightfoot earlier, but a lot of suburban schools are still segregating these graduations like the pandemic's still going on. And it's
that's ridiculous. That's just stupid. I mean, we're fully open a week from today.
Correct. I coach baseball. A lot of Naperville high schoolers, and they all have different graduation times on Sunday, and they all same high school. It's a little ridiculous to me, and I just want to thank you guys for being the voice of freedom every morning on the way to work. It's not easy finding good radio hosts out there for conservatives nowadays, so I do thank you guys for providing that every morning.
Thanks, Anthony. Appreciate it. Appreciate the call. You know, maybe one other thing that I would contemplate the vaccine, since Anthony brought up baseball and the vaccine. If I got to play... Well, one of two things. I either get to play five innings at shortstop for the White Sox, or I get to come out of the pen to close a game.
Just throwing out the first pitch? Why don't we start?
No.
I mean, you really think your arm is that strong for third base?
I said shortstop.
Shortstop? Well, I'm sorry.
Or closer. I'm a junk baller. I'll come in there like a Negro brother and just throw junk.
I'd like you as a closer. That would be good.
Yeah. I mean, $25 gift certificate at Comiskey. How far is it away from being able to, you know, get some field time?
Okay.
Just a thought. Hey, look, I'm open to negotiation. Marvin in Burlington.
Good morning.
Hey, Marvin.
Hi, that fella Anthony, he's right on about you guys and the good radio and this common sense and honest analysis. It's much appreciated. I just have, how can you have any confidence in the vaccine when you have had people that have been misleading you all along since the beginning of this from day one, and we're supposed to have confidence and feel good about going and getting this vaccine. I mean, there's just no way. There's just no way. I won't be taking it, and neither will my family.
What if you get the passwords to Pritzker's or Gina Lisa's offshore accounts?
I prefer to have my own money through my own hard work.
Yeah,
and
Dan.
Earning, not to anybody
can't
else.
Buy him.
They yeah,
can,
can't
they,
buy
they
Marvin.
Can, they can. Yes, sir.
You can't buy Marvin. You can buy me, but you cannot buy Marvin in Burlington. All right.
What about around it at the Masters?
I've already at Augusta?
At Augusta.
How's that? Who's going to get me on Augusta?
Annalisa Rice, if you get vaccinated.
Okay, well, you get Condi to commit to that, and
okay.
Then we'll talk. But I actually have a hookup at Augusta. I don't think I need
Condi. Oh, my gosh. Listen, who's
I
your
do.
Hookup?
It's none of your business.
Listen,
you don't talk out of school about Augusta.
Oh, please. Okay. Excuse me.
What are you doing? What are you talking about?
What's wrong with you, Jacobson?
Terry in Rogers Park.
I think young children being taught sex education is harmful. It might even cause them to want to participate in sex much earlier than what's natural. And I think this can be emotionally harmful, especially for girls.
Thanks for the
call,
Terry.
Well, did you guys see that sex education video for first graders?
It just never ends, the sexualization of children. That's just another iteration of the cultural Marxism that's dominant.
It teaches them how to masturbate. It's disgusting. We're going to play it, and I think it's too gross to even play. I can't even imagine teaching this in first grade.
Who's the instructor, Jocelyn Elders?
No, it's a cartoon character. It's a video that they played. Do you want to hear it or no? It's so gross.
Not really.
All right.
Let's not end with masturbation.
Yeah.
You know, I hate to end the week that way. Ed in LaGrange.
Hey, Dan, I heard you talking about the Jake Cutler Meat Company. The only problem is you have to be sure it's delivered by land. Otherwise, it gets intercepted.
Hi-oh, that's the way to end the week. Thanks, Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.